When Mrs. L compared the sound of music to that of pots and pans being thrown around the kitchen, I was puzzled, for it seemed to me that pitch discrimination alone, however defective, would not produce such an experience. It was as if the whole character, the timbre of musical notes, was being radically undermined. Timbre is the particular quality or acoustic richness of a sound produced by an instrument or a voice, independent of its pitch or loudness. It is what distinguishes a middle C played on a piano from the same note played on a saxophone. The timbre of a sound is influenced by all sorts of factors, including the frequencies of harmonics or overtones, and the onset, rise, and decay of acoustic waveforms. The ability to maintain a sense of timbre constancy is a multi-leveled and extremely complex process in the auditory brain that may have some analogies with colour constancy. Indeed, the language of colour is often applied to timbre, which is sometimes referred to as sound colour or tone colour. I had a similar impression reading Hekean and Albert's case history of the man for whom music was transformed into the sound of a screeching car, and with my own experience of a Chopin ballad sounding as if it were being banged out on a sheet of steel. And Robert Silvers has written to me of how Joseph Alsop, the journalist, used to tell me that the music I admired, or indeed any music, for him was something like the sound of a horse-drawn carriage passing over cobbled streets. These cases, like D.L.'s, differed somewhat from the cases of pure pitch amusia, described by Ayotte et al. In 2002. The term dysdambria is beginning to be used to denote such experiences, and to be recognized as a distinct form of amusia that may coexist with defective pitch discrimination, or occur on its own. Timothy Griffiths, A.R. Jennings and Jason Warren recently reported the striking case of a 42-year-old man who, after suffering a right hemisphere stroke, experienced dysdambria without any alteration of pitch perception. Mrs. L., it would seem, has both congenital dysdambria and impairments of pitch perception. One might think, too, that a gross dysdambria for musical notes would make speech sound very different, and perhaps unintelligible. But this was not the case with Mrs. L. Indeed, Balan, Zatori and their colleagues have found voice-selective areas in the auditory cortex that are anatomically separate from the areas involved in the perception of musical timbre. I asked Mrs. L. how she felt about her failure to get music. Was she ever curious or wistful about what others were feeling? She replied that she had been curious as a child. If I had a wish, it would be to hear music as others heard it. But she no longer gives this much thought. She cannot perceive or imagine what others are enjoying so much, but she has many other interests and does not think of herself as defective or as missing an essential part of life. She is simply the way she is and always has been. Later, reflecting on this, Mrs. L. brought up a passage that had struck her from my book, The Island of the Colorblind. I had described a totally congenitally colorblind friend who had said, "As a kid, I used to think it would be nice to see colors. I suppose it might open up a new world, as if one were tone deaf and suddenly become able to hear melodies. It would probably be a very interesting thing, but it would be confusing." Mrs. L. was intrigued by this and said, "If I were to hear melodies by some miracle, would I also be confused? Would I have to learn what melody is first? How would I know what I was hearing?" In 1990, Isabel Peretz and her colleagues in Montreal devised a special battery of tests for evaluating amusia, and they have been able, in many cases, to identify the broad neural correlates of certain types of amusia. They feel that there are two basic categories of musical perception, one involving the recognition of melodies, the other the perception of rhythm or time intervals. Impairments of melody usually go with right hemisphere lesions, but representation of rhythm is much more widespread and robust, and involves not only the left hemisphere, but many subcortical systems in the basal ganglia, the cerebellum, and other areas. There are many further distinctions. Thus, some individuals can appreciate rhythm but not meter, and others have the reverse problem. There are yet other forms of amusia, all probably with their own specific neural bases. There may be an impairment of the ability to perceive dissonance, the discordant sound produced by a major second, for example, something that is normally recognized and reacted to, even by infants. Gosselin Sampson and others in Peretz's lab have reported that loss of this ability, and nothing else, may occur with particular types of neurological lesion. They tested a number of subjects in discriminating dissonant from non-dissonant music, and found that only those with extensive damage to an area involved in emotional judgments, the parahippocampal cortex, were affected. Such subjects were able to judge consonant music to be pleasant and to judge music as happy or sad, but they did not show the normal response to dissonant music, which they rated as slightly pleasant.